Introducing Bluehost Cloud, ultra-fast WordPress hosting with 100% uptime. Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Of course you do. And now you can have all three with Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost. With 100% uptime and incredibly speedy load times, your WordPress websites will be dependable and lightning fast on a global scale. Plus, your sites can handle even the biggest traffic spikes without going down or lagging. And with Bluehost Cloud, you get 24/7 WordPress priority support, meaning you're connected to WordPress experts anytime you need them. Not to mention, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. So, what are you waiting for? Get Bluehost Cloud today by visiting Bluehost.com. That's Bluehost.com.
You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow or find an awesome template. No judgment.
Hey there, Art History Babe Nation. Got a couple of updates for you because that is apparently what we do at the beginning of episodes now. Let's see. It is March and we have a couple of cool things going on. We have a spring giveaway. So you could be entered to win an original artwork by Tiana Bracey, contemporary artist out of Chicago, Art History Babe stickers, a Van Gogh Smoking Skull t-shirt, a Diebenkorn exhibition catalog, and a pair of studio headphones. So a lot of goodies in this month's giveaway. To be entered to win, you gotta show us some love on iTunes/Apple Podcasts. Write us a review. Head on over to iTunes, Apple Podcasts, write us a review, and then screenshot said review and email it to us at arthistorybabes@gmail.com. I believe you can only write one review per account, so you can only really do one entry unless, of course, you can hijack some accounts of your friends and family. So to be entered to win, you must email us a screenshot of your review by April 10th, and the winner will be chosen. So yeah, good luck, everyone. And also, for those of you who don't know, we are on Patreon, patreon.com/arthistorybabes. And every month, we do an exclusive bonus episode for our patrons. You can become a patron for as low as $1 a month. And our March bonus episode is going to be a Q&A with all four of the Art History Babes. So me, Nat, Ginny, and Jen will all be present, and we'll be answering all of your questions. In order to participate, you have to be a patron, obviously, and you have to submit your questions via Patreon by March 20th. We will answer every single question, so any questions you may have about art, school, pop culture, personal life, whatever, we will answer your questions. If you maybe had a question for us or emailed us and you still haven't heard back or we haven't gotten around to it, this is a great time to get your question answered. If you want to participate in that, just head over to patreon.com/arthistorybabes and get your question in by March 20th. Also, quick shout out to our producer level patrons, Sarah Sawatchka Dalton, Anne Marie Piccioni, and Teresa Rogers for keeping the Art History Babes going, as well as a thank you to all of our patrons. Another cool thing we're doing, we're on Spotify now. The podcast is on Spotify and has been on Spotify for a while, but we're also doing playlists. So if you search for us on Spotify, in addition to the podcast, there is a personal account that has playlists inspired by works of art and just episodes of the podcast. And we're going to be doing those every so often. So check us out, follow us on Spotify. And lastly, if you haven't, make sure to check out artandobject.com. We've been partnering with them for a while now. It's a really great website. I've been getting a lot of my contemporary art news from Art and Object lately. It's a great mix of contemporary art news and just information involving art and art history. You've got podcasts, you've got articles, videos, all kinds of stuff, all in one convenient location. So be sure to check out artandobject.com. That's all I got for you right now. Thank you so much for listening and supporting, and enjoy the show.
The Art History Babe.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Corey.
I'm Natalie, and we are the Art History Babes.
And we're coming to you live from Los Angeles, California. Woo, SoCal, what's up? And we have a guest. We have a special guest.
Say hello. Oh, as I cut you off.
Hello.
This is our friend Kyle.
Nice to meet you.
What's up, Kyle? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
My name is Kyle Janes. I'm an artist designer based out of Los Angeles, and I also run a small organization on the side called NeatSpeak.
Tell us about NeatSpeak.
So NeatSpeak is basically a small organization of creatives that I started with some friends of mine. And we're basically, we aim to create unique and kind of immersive experiences surrounded in the creative industries and also create a community and various different resources for both the creative individuals that admire and are inspired by the creative industry and those that also participate and are professionals of the industry as well.
So you're kind of like bridging the gap between the two, like being a resource for either.
Exactly.
Cool. Very cool. And you are an artist. What are your mediums? How do you say that? Mediums?
What are your mediums?
I studied art.
What mediums do you like to work in, Kyle?
Shoot. I mean, that's kind of a hard question for me. By trade, I am a graphic designer, so I do a lot of digital work, branding, etc. But also, I have a really hard time focusing on mediums. And so I do illustration, both analog and digital illustration. I do collage work. I dabble a little bit in painting. I do some film photography as well. But I would say I primarily do graphic design work, illustration, and collage work right now.
Nice. Very cool.
So the three of us just went to the opening night of the LA Art Show, which we will be here for the duration of the show for the rest of the week. And so we'll be making lots of content for you all to watch and listen to about the show. But we got to kind of spend a little time there today, look around. Can you, from your point of view, tell us a little bit about the LA art scene, like what you've experienced, what you think, really whatever. What do you feel about,
sure.
About you've LA?
You've been in it for a while, so.
Yeah. I mean, I love the LA art scene in general. I feel like there's a lot of enthusiasm about art. There's a lot of like community aspect depending on where you go. There's also a lot of competition depending on where you go. There's a whole spectrum here. And there's definitely a very authentic LA scene, depending on who you talk to and where you go, and some work that feels very LA-esque. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that the best part about being in LA for me is the range of everything. LA is such a large city, both demographically and geographically, that really, like, whatever you're into, there's somebody doing it to the fullest extent that they possibly can. Mm-hmm. And so it's a place where if you go and you look hard enough, you'll find your people. So that's probably my favorite part of it. Yeah, I work a lot with artists that are starting out, some lowbrow artists, some designer artists, and things like that. And so it's been my experience for the most part.
And it feels like a really new and young arts community. It's very contemporary compared to other places that maybe are a little more old school or steeped in tradition and tied to tradition. Mm-hmm. LA is just very...
LA feels very hot, fun, contemporary.
Well, it's like symbiotic with Hollywood.
Yeah, exactly. Of, it seems almost more playful. And yeah, definitely there is a connection to, I think, that Hollywood culture compared to the art scenes in New York City, or like where there's more of a culture, more of a history. Just like being at the LA Art Show tonight, it was clear, like, it was the place to be. It was a fun, cool thing to do in LA, you know,
but also not for one type.
Which was great.
People in high fashion and like runway clothes, and then you have us in like jeans.
And my oversized sweater.
but we didn't look out of place.
No,
everyone fits.
It was like, cool. Everyone, and I totally agree. I definitely liked that vibe. I liked that it was an all walks of life coming to look at cool art, and it felt very LA in that way. So that particular culture surrounding the arts. Have you found it easier to make your way as an artist with that kind of a culture, that kind of a vibe? Or have there been more barriers? Or what has your experience been like?
I think that it's definitely made it easier. Also, there's kind of a street art culture here, which there is other places as well, but there's a very strong street art culture here. And so there's kind of this celebration of DIY, I think, and lowbrow art and things like that, to where, like, I definitely don't think it's true that you have to be represented by a gallery to get started here. Like, I've been to art shows that pop up in pizza places and like vinyl record shops. And if no one wants to represent you, you can go throw it up on the streets and just keep doing it until someone notices. And it's really interesting to kind of see how that manifests and how there's this whole spectrum of the art scene, and you can keep doing your thing and then find your spot where you fit in. And eventually you find your people.
Yeah. So being a younger artist trying to establish yourself in all these different mediums, what have been some of the challenges you've come up against, or have you experienced any barriers to entry or like any big issues, or has it been kind of an organic experience?
Well, you kind of inhabit the world between commercial design and art making.
Yeah.
Is that kind of what you're doing?
Yeah.
So that sounds pretty organic from what you've told me, not to answer your question for you, as I'm doing right now.
No, totally. I think one of the things that's very interesting to me is sort of in like the neat speak, like our community that we're generating. I've noticed that the general person nowadays has a real interest in experiences in the creative arts. Like everybody is bombarded with images, especially in LA, almost to a point of fault, because like sometimes I'll like total nerd designer thing to do, but when I'm downtown or even just on the way to my apartment, sometimes I'll stop at a stoplight and I'll look around and I'll try and count all the things that have been designed by some hired designer around me just at that stoplight.
That's a good exercise.
Yeah. And most of the time I can't count them before the light turns green.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting because one of the things that I've found being kind of like that bridge between the average person and the art community, or the corporate world and the art community, is that there's this huge demand, and it's growing and growing, for visual arts, audio-based arts, performance arts, all sorts of different creative arts, but people don't always attribute them to art because they're inundated with all these other images.
Yeah.
So like, we've almost had to get creative with how we want to plan out some of these events, because if we market them as art galleries, it's hard to mobilize people, especially unless you have like a huge name or you're with a gallery or something like that. It's hard to say like, hey, I'm throwing this art show, do you want to come? And to the average person, they're like, I don't know. That's like not, I'm not an art person. That's not really my scene. So a big challenge that we've had is it's almost like we kind of like trick people into going to art shows, and we like slide it into other ways.
Dude, that's totally on brand for what we do, because I feel like we kind of trick people into liking art history. Like, we're gonna talk about all this pop culture stuff, and then we're like, haha,
right?
Art show,
you learned something, bitches.
exactly. That's super interesting to me because, especially being in a community like LA. I don't know, just the LA vibe. Everyone wants to be at the cool spot with the cool thing and the cool people.
Even earlier, just talking about like, California.
And, yeah, yeah.
I mean, we're talking
everyone
about
wants
LA,
to be so cool. Like,
yeah, it's true. And it's as
and
you
I mean,
were
California is
things.
Cool, to be fair.
But stop trying so hard.
I really enjoy LA. I think it's, you know, a great city with so much opportunity, and shit, I might end up moving here. So definitely not trying to talk down to LA in any way. But that's
there's a lot of social competition here too.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, that's just the general vibe, is you want to be at that hot party or that hot event.
Exactly.
Everyone is. We walked into the art show tonight and they have one of those screens where you can take a picture.
What's it called, Kyle?
Step and repeat.
A step and repeat.
That's my lane.
No idea. And I literally walked in and we saw that and I was like, that's so fucking LA. Like having that picture like you were on a red carpet almost, you know?
Creating that atmosphere, creating that vibe for people, like they're at this exclusive event.
Exactly. And I mean, to be fair, they are, you know, it's not like it's
a lie, but that is part of it. And yeah, exactly. There is this idea you just want to be at certain events, you want to be doing certain things. And so this idea that from a business standpoint or corporate standpoint, you have to kind of take an art experience and market it in a way that
it reminds me of Parks and Recreation of entertainment.
What 720?
Oh, yeah. It's an arts experience.
Exactly. I mean, we've joked about that with our podcast too. I have said, we are going to become an art history experience.
Yeah.
So right.
People want to be in on these experiences.
And it's right. Like half jest, half real. Because yeah. That's how you get people nowadays.
Exactly. Right. If you're just saying, hey, come to an art show, come to a gallery opening, but like come to this event. It's a new thing.
No, because people that are art people, they're into it. You know,
yeah.
Like if they know the artist, if they have an appreciation for it, you don't have to sell it to them. But for anybody else that feels like art is this unapproachable thing, it just feels like such a foreign concept to them. And so we've even played around with the idea of like, well, what if we rented out a venue and we got a, you know, alcohol sponsor and we'll set up like this beer cocktail bar thing in the corner. And then we invited people and basically sold it as a bar, but then when they get there, there's all these like performances, you know, and there's like somebody live painting, and then there's curated wall space, and there's a musical performance and all this type of stuff. And we just market to people as this really unique bar experience. And then they get there and they leave and they're like, oh, that was the coolest bar we've ever been to. And it's like, ha, gotcha. You went to a gallery opening.
Gotcha. It was art.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. If we called it that, you would have never come. We call it a bar and you're there.
And I think you're tapping into something we talk about a lot on the show too, is throughout years and years, especially throughout the 20th century, like 80s, 90s, there an elitism was created around art in the art world. Mm. Very intentionally. It was created for a reason. And I understand that reason, but now we're living in a society that doesn't really play by those rules anymore. And we're like moving away from that. And we're waking up to the fact like, wait, why is this elitist? Why is art a thing for certain educated, fancy, rich people?
Right. And it's so arbitrary when you really break it down. It's so arbitrary. There's nothing about it that makes it any more elite than any other creative form. But music to me is the best example because it somehow broke the rule. Music is universal no matter what. There's not a lot tied to it. I mean, you get into classical music.
I mean, I think you could, I would like give that up to things like jazz and rock and roll and, you know,
but music. Even since music's inception, for some reason, that's been more connective to people than any other art form like that.
Right.
Hasn't.
Yeah. It's very universally loved too.
Yeah.
And obviously I don't hate fine arts and I don't hate the concepts around fine arts, but I think that there needs to be a spectrum. You know, there needs to be an entry point for people. And like music, you can take it or leave music. You can turn on the radio and there's music that's created for people to drink to and to go to clubs or to party or to have a good time or whatever. And that music is created strictly for that purpose for those people. And people can love the music the same way. And then there's music that is within that same genre that goes really, really deep. And then that's one genre and there's a whole spectrum to music. And so I think that there needs to be a little bit of that in the art community as well, where you can just find what you like and feel like you can approach it.
Definitely. And I think, I mean, if we're placing blame, I think part of
let's
that.
Let's do it.
comes down to criticism. This is interesting because I just got into a really good conversation about criticism, both music criticism and art criticism, and how just fucking annoying critics are. And it was in reference to music critics, actually.
Oh.
Specifically, so like, I'll just go all the way into this example and hopefully it comes back around. But like I told you, so I've been super into Greta Van Fleet recently. Are you familiar with Greta Van Fleet?
Actually, my boss just told me about that band yesterday.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Cool coincidence.
So I've been super crazy into them. And I could do a whole podcast episode as to why I love them so much. But to sum it up, I think that they're paying, like, they're excavating a classic rock sound, but in a way that's distinctly contemporary. And they're talented as fuck. they're crazy young and they're talented
as fuck.
So
the reason I can tell you that I think you're right is because when you played them earlier, the first song you played, I looked at you and you said, oh, I've heard this. And then a minute later, I had a thought of like, oh, I don't think I have. And I don't think I had. And you sounded surprised when I said I'd heard this. So I kind of had that moment of doubt. But I think it was that classic sound that for a second I was like, oh, I know this. I for sure know this. And then once I really was listening, I was like, no, I don't. Which is cool. Like, that's a fun thing to experience.
Exactly.
When you go through that roller coaster of like, I know this, I know this. Oh, no, I don't know this. And maybe that's something that music can do that visual arts can't, is it's that temporal thing where it can take you on a journey that is a little more universal, whereas art, you have to stop and engage, and it's so on you, on your person to actually do it, whereas music, it's going whether you like it or not. The song's gonna finish whether you're gonna pay attention or not.
There's a quote, before I get back to the story, there's a quote that is, art decorates space, music decorates time.
Yeah.
You know, it.
Saying what I was trying to say much better.
But yeah, I love them because they're clearly influenced by like Zeppelin and Guns N' Roses and Rush and all of these bands, but they're doing something distinctly contemporary and they're stupid young and stupid talented. And I'm really into them right now. But they get a lot of hate. They get a lot of hate because they emulate the sounds of classic artists. And a lot of music critic bros are out there trying to tear them down. And there's one article that was like 10 contemporary rock bands that are better than Greta Van Fleet. And I was like, who the fuck are you to say that they're better? Like, you can say 10 rock bands I like better.
Yeah,
like,
it's so
that's
subjective,
fair.
Yeah.
But what does that... And so this idea of... I am a critic of music or of art or of food or whatever. It created this notion that, I don't know, you're some kind of arbiter of taste, right? And you, for some reason, get to say what is good and what is not. And that actually, like in one of these articles I was reading, someone commented on the article and was like, these kids can play music. They're killing it. They're doing an amazing job. And it's people like you that killed this classic rock sound in the first place because you got so elitist, basically. Elitist about a type of music that speaks to people. Yeah. And at the end of the day, if music speaks to people, even if you're not one of those people, it doesn't change the fact that that music speaks to people. And so it's like, you can be mad all day that people are excited about Greta Van Fleet. Doesn't fucking matter, right? And so that example, I think... In the modern art world, we started giving too much weight to critics. There were people that came in and were like, this is good art and this isn't good art. And we just agreed with them. And we, I think, lost that idea that art is subjective and that there's art for everyone. And that just because you don't like a piece of art, or you might want to be like, I don't like this and this is why I don't like this, that doesn't mean it doesn't speak to other people. And so through the course of time, we created this idea that visual art is only for people who understand it and not just for people, you know?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
That was kind of a rant, but
it's an overdue rant. Yeah.
It's the idea that
art is objective. Yeah.
There's
a right answer. And that's what scares people away. That's what makes people feel intimidated by it. They think they're going to be wrong. They think they're going to get scolded or schooled somehow. And no one wants to open themselves up to that. And I mean, I feel that way about music. And I felt that way growing up. Like, it was kind of intimidating sometimes. Like, if you liked a song that you didn't know other people liked, and you're like, wait, is this a good song? Like, I remember feeling that way when I was younger.
I can't believe you like that song.
Yeah.
That song sucks.
And then your heart is crushed for like 2 weeks and you just don't want to talk to anyone. Song.
And being, I think, in the art world, studying art history, it's the exact same feeling.
Well, because you're being taught all the time.
Yeah. And so it's this idea that you can't like a certain artist because, oh, that's boring, or whatever the reason is. It doesn't
whatever
even
the teacher
fucking
that
matter
you have at that moment says.
Yeah, it
or
doesn't even matter what the
or
reason
implies,
is.
Or yeah.
Okay, my job is talking about art. I hate when people I just met ask me who my favorite artists are, because it makes me nervous, because there's this weird judgy thing. And it's like, I'm making a career for myself talking about art. And I can't even answer that simple question, because in the art community, there is this fear of judgment from someone who has a master's degree in art history. So if I'm dealing with that, I can only imagine what people who don't have a background in arts, like, I wouldn't want to deal with it either, is I think what I'm trying to say. Like, I wouldn't want to walk into that situation either. So going back to the work that you guys are doing, I think this idea of just creating experiences that involve art, it's brilliant. That's what we need to be doing, because that's all art is. It's supposed to decorate. It's supposed to add to an experience. It's supposed to add to your experience. And it doesn't have to be this elitist, intellectual, there's a right and a wrong approach to it.
Right. And actually, it's interesting that we kind of get into the approachable nature of music versus the art scene. And actually, a large thing that we've found just in the short time that we've been doing this is obviously music has caught on like that. So we have NeatSpeak, but we've also created almost like a sister to NeatSpeak that's called Bad Times, because we started running concert events with some local like psych rock bands and things like that, and doing these small like mini festival type events. And it's so easy to get an audience with that. And one of the ways that we are trying to elevate both the concert experience and the art experience is by meshing the two, because we don't want people to go to any of the Bad Times shows and feel like, oh, it was a good concert, like the band was good. We want them to leave and feel like, oh, something was different about that. What mm-hmm. was that? And then when they investigate it further, they find out, oh, the differentiating factor was they included these other mediums, these other artists, these other people that changed the entire experience to where it's no longer just a concert. So I guess an example of that is like this last one. We had one of our friends, Ian Fitzgerald, came, and he's a perfumer, and he... Yeah, he's fantastic. He's such a character. Like, I love that guy to death. And he's gotten into fragrances and engineering fragrances and developing them. He's
Dennis Feinstein.
Better.
But he gets really conceptual with it. Mm-hmm. And so he loved what we were doing and wanted to get involved. So what we did is we had him in the back at our booth, and he was like mixing a fragrance live based on his experience at the concert and the music.
Oh,
and, yeah.
That's the whole thing, man.
Right. And we hired these guys called Stranger Liquids, which are also great guys. And what they do is basically these live liquid visual effects. So they have these overhead projectors and like these pools of water, some sort of liquid, I don't know exactly their mix, and they dip inks into it and they swirl them around, and it creates these like super psychedelic patterns that they project over the bands.
I just got like tingly visualizing that in my head. That just seems so pleasant, like so enjoyable.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Talking like old school projectors, right? Like you would in a class. I can see it in Steven's classroom in the middle of the class.
Exactly.
That he would use to do art examples.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like you get the transparencies and you write on it with the dry erase marker. They get those, and they've found so this simple way that they can, So that right there, to your experience, like you're kind of visualizing it already, and like, but it's a concert, you know? I just described a visual and, I don't know, like scent or an olfactory response, you know, basically to what normally is strictly an auditory experience. And so that doesn't take into effect the already present factors of live music, you know, feeling the bass and all of those types of things, being around people and the energy of the crowd around you and stuff. So what we're trying to do is find ways that we can take what I love about the arts industries and what other people in the community around us are already doing that I and the rest of our team and everybody else finds fascinating, and finding ways to mesh it in with these other experiences that people are already sold on, and using that as an entry point.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, it's kind of what it's all about. And it's the type of art people, at least in a mass sense, are attracted to. Like the popularity of James Turrell is a perfect example. His work is immersive. You walk into an experience and it fucks with your perception. And you're doing this whole thing. And it also looks like a Drake video. And it's like, it's the whole thing. But you're also like experiencing amazing art. Turrell is such a badass, you know?
Right.
And so, yeah, I think you've totally just caught on to what younger generations want out of art experiences, even if they mm-hmm. don't realize that's what they want out of art experiences, you know? Yeah.
That's a good way to put it, because when you were describing a music experience that's also sent, and it kind of already is that without the event, but you can curate it. Like, it would be that without you guys, but you have control over it in what you're doing, because it would smell like sweat and the person next to you is cologne, and
right.
like those things would happen naturally but randomly, whereas you are basically being like, we can control it, like we can yeah. create a controlled setting where we're taking advantage of all of your senses,
yeah,
of I curating
think,
them.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it also kind of steps into that idea and that notion of, you know, like, we play a lot with what is art, what can constitute art. And when you're working with literally all the senses, you're expanding what can be considered art and an art experience in that way. You know what I mean?
Right.
Which artists do, you know, there are artists that play on more than just the visual. And so that's kind of what you're doing. You're incorporating the visual, but allowing for expansion into right. other realms. All right, I'm going to smell this.
It smells really good.
Ooh, that's nice.
Yeah, I was very impressed for, like, at the end of it. Yeah. Like,
oh, yeah, that's comforting.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a good smell.
And how cool, the thought of going to a concert or anything and being able to purchase a scent based on that experience, whether it be a spray or a candle or something, is a really cool thought.
Scent yeah. is the sense that's most connected to memory.
And I think yeah. that's something that's becoming more common knowledge. So people yeah, are more invested. They have those homesick candles and stuff they do now, which yeah. I've never actually seen one, but I appreciate the concept that, yeah, you can buy a candle that reminds you of a certain place or mm-hmm. moment in time. And I think that Ian is ahead of his time on that one. And
yeah.
if that is something well, that can really catch on.
Because I think it also very much speaks to our generation, in the sense that our generation, younger generations, we are, compared to older generations, so much more experience oriented.
Oh, absolutely.
Older generations yeah. wanted things. We want experiences, and we want all the goddamn right. experiences.
Exactly.
All the time. We just want to experience things. And that's why things like social media can work on our generations for better or for worse, is because we want to be in all those places, not because we necessarily want the things everyone has. We just want to be in those places and we want to experience
it yep. somehow.
Yeah.
Even the third party sometimes is just fine, but being able to like have some reference to something.
Exactly.
And feel included in that, in either the experience itself or just the knowledge of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that in itself is a value. Just knowing something happened and details about it is kind of a form of currency.
Yeah, definitely. And if you can capture, if you can in some way, yeah, capture an experience mm-hmm. with a sensory connection, a sensory neural connection, that's like doing double time. Because not only are you providing an experience for those who are paying to be there or interested in being there, you're providing that experience is going to be further embedded into their memory because of all the sensory aspects of it.
Right.
You know, you're creating a stronger memory of the experience,
right.
which is like, we're all doing these experiences for the right. memory. So you're increasing yeah. the potential recall of right. the experience.
Right. Well, because...
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So I started visual arts, graphic design. Well, I started with painting in high school and into college and moved towards graphic design. And then, you know, I want to say like by accident, but honestly, my career path just naturally took a very like experience event oriented route. And it really clicked home for me because now I work at an experiential marketing agency where I help brands create experiences with consumers. But it's not fully, you know, where my heart's at on the commercial side of things, because mm-hmm. I'm a lot more passionate about the down and dirty art scene and, mm-hmm. and music scene and stuff like that. And so what really clicked with me was when I was creating these events, and the very first Bad Times event, I was standing on, I guess, like to the side of the stage as the headliner was playing. And the headliner we had, they drew a little bit of a younger audience, as far as like, you know, it was like high school and into college aged people. And I was thinking back to like when I was in high school, and my best memories, honestly, were surrounded by the music scene and concerts and going to concerts with my mm-hmm. friends and stuff. And so for me, I was standing there and looking out at these kids and basically just like seeing them create the memories that are like really near and dear to my heart.
Yeah.
And that's when it finally clicked. And I was like, I love visual arts and I love creating, and I can't stop, because sometimes I'll keep myself up at night, like just because I like the experimentation and the visual communication aspects of it and aesthetics and everything. But creating memories for people and creating opportunities for artists, musicians, all these different people to be involved in creating these memories for people is like something very unique and special
mm-hmm.
that has like really captured my heart, I guess.
I guess.
I guess. It's like sort he of like I'm deeply in love with it or something.
Also, yeah. When you can see it and you know that other people can't too, sometimes that's enough of an impetus to be like, I know that these two parties can conjoin at this spot and they can't quite see it, but I can see it. So if I can make it happen, that they can get there and like, see how they're connected, how they're related, why they should be interested. That's empowering to be able to right. see those connections that other people can't.
In a lot yeah. of ways, that's what defines an artist. Is yeah. an artist is someone who
truly
brings something to the surface that other people aren't seeing.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
you see something and you make it visible.
Right. And I think a lot of people, they love music, they love arts or images or visuals and stuff like that. But sometimes I think people, maybe they don't need it, but I think it's definitely helpful when you can help people to bridge the gap as to like, well, why do I love this?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, what is it about this that is really speaking to me?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, trying to help people to understand that the images that you love and all of that, like, you know, you follow this travel photographer, like mm-hmm. videographer that's putting out these really good music videos for this band that you love. Why do you love that? Well, it's because they're talented, creative individuals behind that are losing sleep over the fact that you're
yeah.
going to hopefully love what they put out, and then the right collaboration happened at the right time to tell the right story and you connected with it. And so trying to help people bridge that gap on, you know, everyday person level, I think is a huge goal of ours. But on the other side of that too, we love to create the experiences, but the other side of it is we are understanding that as this industry grows, it's really hard for freelancers and visual artists and any sort of artist or creative person to meet demands, because freelancing is hard.
Yeah.
It's like really hard.
Yeah.
And because essentially what you have to do is you have to simultaneously, like you have to build a style, a portfolio, and all of these things. And you have to then create yourself each and every one of your products or services that you're making while simultaneously growing and operating a small business,
mm-hmm.
which is like enough work for a small team
yeah.
of people.
You're preaching to a choir, right?
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. You guys
know vibe that for sure. It's for like, sure, oh, yeah. So like I'm a creative, I also need to know everything about a business. Oh, and I need to know about taxes. Oh, and I need to yeah. like manage everything and talk to everyone. And oh, I need to respond to people that are interested. Like it's just yeah. so much all the time. And yeah, we all just kind of do it with smiles. And
exactly.
like,
yeah. like I've talked to so many artists and designers that go freelance and it's like, oh, how do you like it? And they're like, I've never spent so much time at a computer and not created a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like yeah. I spent 80% of my time emailing people,
yeah, dude.
Like tracking invoices, trying to figure out my finances, trying to figure out copyright laws and
yeah.
all of these different things. And so on the flip side of that, while we try and create these experiences, we also try and balance it by, we run these events called Neat Speak Chats. It's, all of this is pretty new. So we did our first one at the end of September, and we've got another one coming up. We haven't set a date for it yet, but basically the last one was all about freelancing, where I got four of my friends that are doing really good work and creating really, really good careers for themselves freelancing. And I just got them all in a room, and it's all pretty casual. I basically gave each of them a short window, and I said, So I freelance on the side, but I don't fully know the experience of the full-time freelancer. And so I went and I talked to them and I said, hey, you guys understand what it's like to freelance full-time. So our goal is to create something of value to help other people that are struggling with this. I'm going to give you this much time. Let me know what you're going to talk about so I can make sure that you guys aren't all covering the same exact thing, but go wild with it and do whatever you wanted to hear at an earlier point in your career. And then it was really casual. We try and keep the attendance on those a little bit lower, and we take breaks in between. And so you hear a presentation from someone, and then we take a break and you can go and you can just talk to them. And you're one of, like, we try and keep it under 50 people. And so you're one of like a handful of people. And so throughout the night, everybody knew each other and everyone was talking, and it was just kind of a big communal thing.
Yeah.
And so everyone's just kind of figuring it out together a little bit. Yeah.
That sounds so valuable. Like, I want to be a part of that. You're speaking to like issues we deal with on like, I want to talk to more people that are just trying to make their way in these kind of creative industries, because it is, it's so much of just fucking figuring it out as you go and running into problems and then dealing with them. And that's how you know how to deal with them.
Like, right, exactly.
Like, there's no guidebook. Yeah. Like, that just sounded comforting to me. This idea of being in a room of 50 people that kind of know what I'm going through a little bit. That sounds really nice.
Yeah. I mean, even just as a graphic designer in a very specific lane, you're learning Photoshop or something. And like, there have been times where, you know, before I got the job that I have now, like, I would be doing work and like Photoshop, there's like a million different ways to do something sometimes. And so I would be like doing something, and then I got this job and they'd be like, oh, can you do whatever? And I'd be like, yeah, sure. And I'd be doing it. And they'd be like, what are you doing? And then they'd like press a key on my keyboard and it did it for me.
Yeah.
And I was like, I've been taking like a minute. You know, which isn't that much time, but I've been using a minute to do this very simple thing every single time that I try and do that over the past 5 years of my life. And it could have been taking me 1 second.
Yeah, definitely. You know? No, I totally know that vibe. Yeah, there are moments where you learn some kind of sound editing trick or something. And it's like, man, I've been doing that the long way for a long time. And you just, you don't know until you know.
I almost want to say I wouldn't even want to know at this point. And it's not true. I would. I really
just
would.
Just don't tell me.
But looking right now at our audio, the thought of someone telling me something to simplify things does make me a little crazy.
Yeah.
I feel like it's constant. I feel like I'm just constantly learning how to do things differently.
Yeah.
And that is both frustrating, but it's also like you got to grow and you got to learn. And in a weird way, I think our generation is kind of dealing with a lot of the growing pains for the younger generations, because we're at this place of economically moving into a huge creative class, being a huge stronghold in the economy and gig economy and all of these like huge shifts. And we just get to be like the test dummies.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we just get
to guinea pigs.
Yeah. Exactly. We're just the guinea pigs. We just get to figure it out. And
you guys remember what it was like before the internet existed?
Yeah.
Like, we're the last generation that's ever going to have that. Yeah.
That remembers
that. So we have to
shit.
Deal with like the awkward transition.
Yeah. We
I had
are.
Saying that to me recently, where they were like, oh, you don't know what it's like to not have the internet. And I was like, no, no, no. I'm on the bubble. I know what it's like before and after.
Yeah. Exactly. That's what makes millennials so interesting, is we have both experiences and we grew up right at that shift. And exactly.
People are going to be talking about us forever.
It's so true. It's so true.
Well, it's like the internet age. I mean, it's like being alive during the Industrial Revolution or like
100%. I bring that up all the time, actually. We are Industrial Revolution, Protestant Reformation. This is a similar shift.
Yeah.
And we get to be the test run. We get to figure it out. We get to figure out all this shit. And we're just like doing our best. And then the boomers like to talk shit about us all day long. And we're just like over here just fucking doing our best and trying to teach them how to use email.
Email and opioids. No big deal.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's so much, and yet we get shit on at the same time. It's really frustrating. That's just an aside.
Right. It also is a really exciting time, though, because we get to see, like, for instance, I can see the benefit of in-person communities, you know? That's not necessarily to say that people that grew up strictly on the internet don't, but we can hold on to those bits that we remember and be like, oh no, this is something we need to not forget. You know, like, this is something
we've seen both, but that's still as valuable even with this, even with the technology. It holds just as much value, and we need to not forget it.
Like, I can Google things all day, but at some point, if I really want to know about a subject, I need to buy a book.
Yeah,
I need to, because it's compiled, it's curated, or talk to somebody, or for instance, a lot of the inspiration for NeatSpeak came out of the fact that I'm like, well, I don't know how to Google these very specific questions about my experience as a designer. Like, how much should I be charging with this amount of experience and this client and all of this type of stuff? Like, there are organizations that are popping up now that are starting to answer those questions. And starting to create resources for people that can do that through YouTube and other things like that, and interviews and whatnot. But there's always going to be a place for face-to-face, like, this is my experience. This is where I'm at right here. You've done all of this stuff. Like, what do you think about it? Like, am I completely wrong? Am I doing a good job?
The internet also, it just doesn't account for reliability. Yeah, we can get a lot of information. We can get a lot of wrong information on the internet too.
That's a whole
That's a whole thing, and that's real. So yeah, speaking to someone in person that you feel connected with, that you can trust, that you can hear about exactly, like, that is invaluable. Or or reading a published book with verified sources.
Yeah.
You're getting actual information, you know?
We should probably say, being that we are a third party rambly source, like, we're not trying to be a book or any sort of book. We have the utmost respect and urge you to go to books and published sources of information to verify that you're getting the facts straight, as we do. So yeah, don't use us and our rambling as fact.
That just reminded me of the most recent episode of Saturday Night Live. It was Weekend Update. And Michael Che was like talking about when kids come up to him and they're like, "You're where I get all my news." And he's like, "Don't do that. No, like, don't do that." I mean, like, we try and give the best information we can, and we do our research, and it's not like it's half-assed in any way. But yeah, if we say something that's interesting or something that grabs your attention, go get a book on that subject. Yeah. You're going to get a much more in-depth understanding of that subject. Whereas we're just sharing our thoughts and feelings on the stuff we've learned.
We're a conduit. We're here to spark curiosity, to loosely inform.
Also, if you've been to our website, we like to point you in those directions too, by giving you our sources that we use and those things. But yeah, 100%.
Like, well, I think also that you guys occupy a very important space, because... Yeah.
That's how important we are.
Because I, like, talking about books, you know, and going, and I need to go buy a book at some point, I've gotten a lot better as I've gotten older. But for me, I'm not a textual learner. So, like, if I was to pick up an art history book and read it cover to cover, I would not get the same experience as listening to a podcast and finding personalities that I enjoy talking about topics that are starting to really interest me. And then at that point, you can go and you can dig further and things like that. But being that entry point and personifying it and putting personality into it and making it come to life in a way that a book struggles to, you know, for a lot of people, is a very important space.
No, I totally agree. And I think is our food here?
That's our food.
I think food. Our food's here.
Food.
Nat's going to go get our, what did we even get? Thai food? Nat's going to go get our Thai food.
Very important
job. But I think you kind of just really, like, hit the nail on the head in terms of both the value and the downsides of the internet and these mediums. They're unbelievably valuable because they can reach people in a way that resources, academic resources, just haven't been able to reach people before. And they can do so with personality and in different interesting ways. But at the same time, I think we like to jump on this idea that the internet is some kind of catch-all where all the answers are. And it might be someday. It's not that yet, though.
Oh, absolutely.
It's just not. Everything isn't on the internet. You can find a starting place for just about anything on the internet. When we were in grad school and we talked to our students, you know, there's a reason you can't cite Wikipedia on a research paper. That doesn't mean Wikipedia isn't a great place to start, though, right?
Like, yeah, absolutely.
And the internet is like that. It's messy and it's a great place to start for anything and an amazing tool. But like, yeah, you have to seek out people who know what they're talking about. You have to look at texts. You have to look at reliable sources like documentaries. Like, you have to find reliable things no matter what the subject matter is. Because as we also know and has been coming to light in the past couple of years with politics, is there's a lot of false information out there too.
Right.
And it's just as easy to find. So yeah, I mean, in regards to us, we hope that you learn a lot from what we're doing and we strive to make it as educational as possible, but we're not experts on every subject. And if we talk about something that's interesting to you, you should probably search further into that particular subject and find people who are experts on it. But it's just a weird liminal space that we're existing in as millennials trying to navigate what the future of life and like the economy and like everything is going to be. We're trying to use all of these resources. But yeah, like you said, not forget the positives of what life was like before the internet.
Right.
But yeah. I know that got kind of rambly, but
no problem. I mean, there's like, there's a lot of things to unpack there too.
Yeah.
I think that like,
we're just trying to like solve the world's problems. On this episode.
Just like, it's just, you know, just quick fix, you know, throw a Band-Aid on it. It's fine. Everything's fine.
It's fine. Well, Nat's here with the food. Do you want to kind of wrap things up with maybe just a quick synopsis of everything we just talked about? Just a quick kind of wrap up of what you do, Neat Speak, and where people can find you.
Absolutely, yeah. So again, my name is Kyle Janes, and my personal handle, if you're interested in the art that I do, most of my work is experimental and just purely for fun.
You're interested? It's fun, guys.
It's at Kyle Can't Draw with periods in between each one. So kyle.can't.draw. If you're interested in NeatSpeak, you can go to at NeatSpeak or neatspeakcreatives.com to find more or to get connected or send us an email, whatever. And Bad Times, which is our more music scene oriented things, if you're interested in that, it's at Bad Times With, which is also still promoted on NeatSpeak because it's a little bit of two sides of the same coin. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we would love to get in touch with anybody that wants to get involved, because as I mentioned before, we're just trying to build a community and create authentic and fun experiences for anybody involved, whether you love the art community and the creative communities, or you literally make a living off of it and you're trying to meet other people who do the same and figure this crazy career path out on your own and you want people involved. We're just trying to get anybody that is interested connected. So
yeah,
dope. Okay.
It's all linked below. Sweet. So go look.
Check it out.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Definitely check out all of that. Also, stay tuned for all of our LA content we're making while we're here. We've got more LA art show stuff. We're going to have videos. If you want to see me and Kyle bust a move, head over to our YouTube channel.
Again, I'm here to tell you, you want to see it.
Quality content.
That is the quality content. Yeah, we'll have all kinds of videos from our LA adventure. It's just getting started right now, but I promise it's going to be an adventure. It's going to be good. So
we can feel it in our bones.
We can feel it. So yeah, head over to our YouTube channel, you know, like and subscribe and hit the bell, because you have to do all of those things to support our YouTube channel. You can also support us by writing us an iTunes review. Those really help. And of course, becoming a patron on Patreon. We love our patrons so much. For as low as one $1 a month.
It's so low.
It's really so low. Absurdly low.
What can you get for a dollar these days, guys?
Nothing. Not a damn thing, except bonus episodes by the Art History Babes. And you can help us, you know, I don't know, eat for a month. So, yeah, if you like what we're doing and you want to support us and you want to get access to all that bonus content.
Then help us eat.
Help us eat, man. Because going back to our earlier conversation, we're rocking the gig economy over here. And we're just trying to make it.
We're veering too far into beggars now. Gotta close it.
If you like our content, if you appreciate what we're doing, yeah, $1 a month, it helps. We have so many $1 a month patrons, and it's like that shit adds up, man.
Yeah,
we appreciate you guys. We really do. I think that's all I got. Gonna eat some Thai food.
Yeah, the room smells like MSG and possibilities.
Amazing.
We need to go.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys so much for having me.
Thanks
I'm
for being here,
a genuine fan of your content, and I think you guys are doing a great thing.
Oh, that's amazing. I love
we'll
it.
We'll be back. We'll do events.
Yeah, please.
Let's hang out all the time. Yeah. Like every day.
Let's get going.
This is the first of many.
This is the first of many. Yeah. Thank
you. You guys are always welcome in LA.
Aw.
We'll be here all the time.
Yeah. But yeah, thank you so much for being on the show.
Absolutely.
Was really fun. Yeah, we're going to go hang out and eat food. And thanks for hanging out with us and listening to us, you guys. We love you all.
Increasingly quieter voices. Good night.
We're getting quiet. We're fading out.
Oh, you can barely see us on the screen.
We're going away. Goodbye.
From Cabernet to Mont-Lay, they're here to slay the Art History Babes.
We've decided art is subjective somehow.
Art is objective, you mean?
Objective, that's the word. I used to get those mixed up all the time in high school, so high school Nat, hey, welcome back.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.